What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar. This morning, joined by podcast producer Ben Elman. Hey, Ben.
Hey there, everybody.
Hey, everybody. This week, we've got a bunch of news to talk about, and also, Sherlyn and the whole crew from Apple Campus have a special segment that they recorded on-site there. If you're looking for a recap of all of Apple's news, go back and listen to the last episode, because me and Nate recorded something there where we just responded right after the Apple event about our initial thoughts, and we went over all the news there. So that's where you can find all that stuff. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcastengadget.com, especially if you have any questions, because those could get used in our Ask Engadget section. And join us Thursday mornings around 10:30 a.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel. You'll see our live stream. You can chat with us. And sometimes we'll even have some devices for Q&A. I'm pretty sure that's going to be the case in the next few weeks. So stay tuned.
Joining me for this special episode today is Engadget's senior reporter, Carissa Bell. Hey, Carissa.
Hey, I'm excited to be here.
It's so nice to be here in person. And we have a special guest, Allison Johnson, senior reviewer at The Verge. Hello.
Hello.
It's nice to have the competition in here because we didn't do things.
Oh, no.
To them, with them, around them.
I'm surrounded. I don't know.
This was actually a trap.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shoot.
I like Apple events. I like tech events like this because we get to hang out with our friends. People don't usually know we like to talk to each other at these things. So it's nice to have you here, Allison. Thank you for joining us. The iPhone 17 launch was this week. By the time this video and podcast episode goes out, Carissa, I just wanted to know, like, because Allison and I saw this in Steve Jobs Theater. Like, we watched the same stream, though. Did you feel any sort of thoughts based on first impression of these devices from home? And then, you know, you've been out here at Apple Park, you've caught glimpses of this thing around. What do you have any different opinions now that you're here in person?
I guess it's been interesting in general for me to see this kind of transition from, you know, you'd show up to the theater and like you would actually see, you know, or even prior to Steve Jobs Theater, you'd see like Apple events, like actually, you know, they were doing it live.
Yeah.
Versus these very like orchestrated,
right,
like video streams,
right,
has been like interesting to watch. I will say that I was surprised about the camera bumps on the new phone. Mm. I mean, you know, there were some leaks that came out ahead of time. I think they actually like look a bit better, mm-hmm, from what I've seen so far, even in just like in the press images and everything that's come out. Like, okay, they look a little bit nicer than I expected.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Still seems like I'm still adjusting to the new look though.
Yeah. It's a big change.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think they look better in person. You kind of read the rumors and all that. The orange color is super nice.
Can we, is any of that orange around you, behind you, Carissa, for the people who are watching the video version of this, the orange is, I've been saying it's like the action button on the Watch Ultra, basically. Oh, does that feel right to you?
Yeah. It is kind of an outdoorsy orange.
It feels like a warning kind of orange, like a traffic cone orange.
Yeah.
Not a Nissan Altima.
It's nice. It's spicy. It's, you know, let's have some vibrant colors. Yeah. There's some interesting things going on. I think the cosmetic changes are maybe give a signal that there's more going on under the hood than there really is. But there's still some cool stuff to check out.
It's so refreshing to see something visually different.
Yeah,
I just get bored by sameness. So we're going to talk a lot more about just the iPhone 17 lineup. I think there's just so much that was announced around like Watch, around AirPods. I don't think we're going to have time to really dive into that. Plus, Allison, you're mostly a phone reviewer, right?
Mostly phones. I dabble in the others.
Do you care about smartwatches?
I use one.
Yeah.
But I don't follow it like beat for beat, I guess.
Carissa, you're an iPhone user too? Are you a smartwatch?
Yes.
A watch user as well?
Okay, I'm going to like out myself here. I have a Series 5 Apple Watch.
Whoa, girl, nice. What?
That I exclusively use for like workouts and running, and I don't use it for anything else.
Well,
you're getting your money's worth. That.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're here, and there's an Apple store.
They do have a store.
Or maybe we'll see about making you a reviewer of one. But yeah, so of the phone lineup, let's start with you, Allison, because you're the special guest. What was your favorite?
I mean, I go for the Pro just because I love the camera stuff. I love all that. Like, it, you know, it's doing a crop zoom kind of thing and getting into the nitty gritty of that. So I feel like there's the most going on with the camera, you know, always with the pro.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and I just appreciate that the smaller pro still, you know, maintains like you get the same telephoto camera. You're not making big sacrifices on other stuff, which seems to be like across the board now.
Yeah.
Like Pixel does that too.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm glad we all got here. Yeah, I like the little pro is always the one I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when there was a year they added like a telephoto zoom to the Pro Max and not the Pro. And then that was the year right before they shifted to titanium too. So it was heavy. And the number of times I've cracked my skull in bed because I was holding the Pro Max.
Oh, no. Yes. That was a heavy phone.
It's a heavy phone.
Yeah.
Carissa, are you a Pro Max girly or?
No, I'm with Allison. I'm the small Pro is where it's at for me. I don't, you know, I want to be able to hold my hand and my phone in one hand comfortably. Yeah. Like, even as it is, like, I can barely reach my thumb across it, you know?
And that's how I dropped the phone. That's how cracks. Yep.
It's hard enough to get in your pocket as it is.
What pocket? Girl, what pocket are you talking about? By the way, I was like, I don't know how you all felt about that crossbody strap that was announced. And when it was initially announced, it was like cheers in the audience. And I was like, what are y'all on about? I was like, are y'all nuts? Like, why are you cheering for a cross, like a sling? And then I was like, hang on a second. This dress doesn't have pockets. I want my phone on me securely and easy to reach and not in a bag. Dang, I like that crossbody strap. I mean, do either of you want that?
I want it. I don't know if I'm maybe like too old or not old enough to pull it off, you know?
You want it? Okay.
I'm going to, I'll give it a try, you know, when I can. But yeah, the idea of like, I am constantly, I have a coffee in my hand like at all times usually. So that's one hand down. And then if I need to check something on my phone, like, what do? You can just drop your phone. Just,
right.
It's just on you.
Right. Exactly. Just let it go.
Yeah, just let it go. Yeah.
Anyway.
Exactly.
Carissa?
You know, I feel like there's very few situations where I would actually pull that thing out and, like, just sling my phone across myself. But I will say, so I just got back from vacation recently. I was in Argentina.
Nice.
And I saw several people with similar kind of straps, like, carrying their phones around when I was there. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's not like an accessory that I often see around here. Mm-hmm. So like clearly there is like some kind of demand, like people are already using this. So I guess I wasn't that surprised that Apple would make one.
Yeah. I guess when you said something about age to Allison, I was like, is it the equivalent of those like glasses chain? You know, like when you stick it to wear around your neck and then like boom, you just drop it.
Right. I feel like if you had your phone on a lanyard, that might be a bridge too far.
Yeah. My neck doesn't have the strength for that heaviness, but
when it's crossbody, it's fashion.
I will say I was shopping for a new bag the other day. Well, I've been trying to get a new bag, and all the options coming up were like these crossbody phone cases. So to sort of the point we're almost making here, Apple is not new in the concept, right? It's not something, but I did like the way the strap kind of like adjusts. It's magnetic on itself.
It's so cool.
It's so interesting the way you adjust the length of it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that is unique because I just haven't looked into these things.
I
have no idea.
But I was like, this rules. I will just play with this.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, Carissa, favorite phone of the lot?
You know, I think I got to say the Orange Pro.
Okay.
It's just so nice to see color again in the iPhone lineup. Like, I feel like we just see so many, like, kind of, like, neutral tones or, like, beigey gray shades. And, you know, orange isn't, like, my favorite color, but just seeing a really bold color again. I don't think we've seen an orange iPhone in quite a long time.
Yeah.
Especially not that shade of orange. It's just, like, nice to see something that you see right away and you're like, whoa, that's cool.
Yeah, the iPhone 17 Pro orange, cosmic orange. It's the name of it. I am reminded that the orange and the invite image and all that, like there's even the background of this space here, there's this sort of like thermal scan situation going on. And it really calls to mind the idea of the vapor chamber in the iPhone Pros this year. And it's a first for Apple. It, I think, addresses a very important thing for a lot of us. I don't know how often for both of you does your phone run hot to the point where like it won't, you know, charge anymore, or like it just is so uncomfortable to hold on to. But like, Allison, you review a lot more phones than I do nowadays. Vapor chambers in phones isn't brand new.
Right.
Have they worked in other devices? And do you think it's good that Apple's done this?
I think anything, you know, it's forward progress, it feels like. It feels like across the board, like the phones are running hotter. The cooling and the heat dissipation kind of step up every year. But I feel like the chips also get like
more powerful
and we're running more on-device AI and doing crazy things in video and portrait mode stuff. So yeah, I'm curious. It really is like good. Thank you. Sometimes I open a web page that has too many things on it and my phone heats up like no other.
And then it gets slow, right?
Yeah. The thing I have trouble with as a person who lives in Seattle, it just doesn't, it's not that like hot and sunny for much of the year. I always got to get a temperature check from other people who live in sunny places. I'm like, did the screen dim a lot on you? Because I don't know. It's like
raining. So you don't run into the situation where you're like doing something and your phone just runs hot on its own.
I am always opening up a website called Icy Veins to play Diablo 4 and like cheat my way to having a good character.
Good job.
Shout out to Icy Veins. I love it. It runs so hot. It is like the torture test for every phone I use. And it'll heat up and things kind of like judder to a halt. But so I'm going to pull up Icy Veins and see what's what.
Carissa, do you care about vapor chambers and phones? Like, did that appeal to you, that bit of news?
My phone does get hot a lot. So it does appeal to me. I guess I don't quite understand like how much cooler
right.
is it going to be. Like it's never going to get hot. It's just going to cool off faster when it does get hot. Like what is, you know, maybe you can speak to this because it sounds like you know more about this, but like what does the vapor chamber like actually accomplish?
Yeah, well, I'm confused too, to be honest, because there's like, there's cooling the system and then there's dissipating the heat and like sending the heat away, which is going to make it feel hot. So that's a good thing to some extent, but you sort of want to not get there in the first place. I couldn't get a good read on it. Like if I'm holding this in my hand doing something intense, is it going to be cooler? Is it just going to be doing a better job and not run?
So based on some of the materials Apple has shown at its keynote and some of the like press release stuff, the A19 Pro processor that's in the Pros has been moved, relocated within the chassis of the iPhone 17 Pros. The vapor chamber overlaps sort of on parts of it. And where the phone gets hot is where the processor is just like going crazy, right? So it starts generating heat. If the vapor chamber is positioned well enough, it can draw the heat and dissipate it better. So it's partly the positioning. It's got more space to send the heat out. And the fact that it's even got a vapor chamber to do that. There's like Sam Rutherford on our team knows the science a bit better to explain this, but it's about like something like a pressure differential, something about moving the air around. And there's some liquid in it that like evaporates and then becomes water, condenses. And then there's a lot of that, like I'm throwing out words that I heard or you know from Sam about like how do vapor chambers work, that sort of thing. So it basically dissipates, and like from some videos that I think were at the keynote, it should help the iPhone 17 Pro not get as hot as the 16 Pro, right? And so not just through dissipating, I mean dissipating alone frees up like the temperature like threshold, but because of the repositioning too, like there's just more room for the heat to go off of the phone. And it's not just on the processor area, from what I understand, the charging side of things. When you're charging your phone, sometimes it does run hot in that scenario. Just the presence of the vapor chamber will also help better dissipate any sort of collection of heat. So it should help. I don't know how much.
And it should help with the like overall battery health too, right? Because isn't heat like the main thing that makes a battery degrade? I know it's charging cycles and other things, but you know that battery getting hot all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good reminder for me to not put my phone under my butt right now. But I don't enjoy it. Yeah. Good job. You live in Seattle. Your battery health is probably
pristine.
Nice.
Yeah.
In New York, we get ass hot and then we get butt cold. So
yeah.
I don't know if we can say ass, but I guess I just said it. But yeah. So, okay. So we, all three of us love the pros, but did you like the iPhone Air, Carissa?
So I like it from the perspective of our colleague Sam wrote a great piece about this, mm-hmm. that it kind of gives you a sense of where Apple might be going with the next generation of phones. You know, what he wrote was that, you know, having this very thin phone is kind of the first step of potentially having some kind of device that can fold, for example. Mm-hmm. So I think when you look at it from that perspective as like, you know, it's very impressive feat of engineering mm-hmm. to get an iPhone into that thin of a package. You know, maybe that sets us up for like an even more exciting phone in the future. I think that's pretty cool. As a standalone phone right now, I just not really sure it makes sense for me, and I'm not really sure who it makes sense for, to be honest. It has some interesting features, but the battery life seems like a major drawback. That single camera seems like, you know, we're way past the point where you can have, you know, something that's considered to be a top of the line phone, you know, that costs $1,000 with one lens. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just not really sure who it's for, but I think it shows us some really interesting things about what we might see in the future.
Do you agree, Allison?
Yeah, I do. I think there's, and, you know, you might agree with the like Samsung Galaxy S25 Edge kind of experience where on paper, you're like, is this really that big of a difference? It's like a little thinner, whatever. And then you pick it up and use it. You're like, whoa, okay, no, this actually is kind of different. I think maybe there's an audience for that who will be like, yeah, actually, I'm fine giving up all this other stuff. I just don't want to lug a heavy phone around anymore. But yeah, I think the reality is a lot of people will have trouble trading off battery life, going to the single camera for the benefits of its thinner. It's sort of almost a question of like, I feel like the regular 17 has like people who are going to buy that know who they are. And then there's the pro crowd and there's people who are kind of in between the pro and the air, mm-hmm. which just seems weird. But
this is weird.
Yeah. But they're like, maybe I can just give it all up and live free. And I'm already having those conversations in my DMs and Slack. Yeah. Where I'm like, well,
camera is important to me. I don't know about you. Well, the good thing is, I guess, the selfie camera, right? Like on all the iPhone 17s, including the Air, support center stage, have that 24 megapixel square sensor, which to me was very intriguing. Like just as from the technological engineering perspective, I'm like, whoa, why didn't we think about this before? You know what I mean? It's like, oh, interesting. I guess the Air is for someone that's like not so, you know, into a telephoto experience, for example, like a far away telephoto experience, or like needs ultra wide camera. When I was reviewing the iPhone 16e, I was like, no, ultra wide sucks.
It's hard. Yeah.
When you're forced to like live without the ultra wide after having it uh-huh. at your disposal all the time, I think that's a big problem. And like the last time I didn't use an ultra wide or didn't use a phone with an ultra wide was before the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Is an ultra wide important to y'all? Am I the only one?
Yeah. Cause you can, for better or worse, zoom in on stuff a little and I'll tolerate like a little
pixelation.
Bit of digital zoom. You can't, sometimes you just can't move backwards anymore. You're like, well, you're getting cut out of this picture. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Or not. Do you use it?
Yes.
The ultra wide. There we go. So three of us won't be buying the Airs. I was thinking like, I was on a different podcast earlier today, Brian Tong, shout out. We were like the only people that might consider the iPhone Air are possibly the Apple diehard, the faithful who are like, we will buy anything that's really like significant like that. Or you have dual devices, you have two. And for me, if I had that kind of money, I'd be like main the 17 Pro. Uh-huh. The Air is my take to the gala and the little clutch, a little purse.
Really?
Phone.
But not the crossbody? You could crossbody it.
Who, What are you wearing?
Okay, yeah.
If it's that you can wear across
if it's an evening attire, maybe mm-hmm. that's.
I'm not wearing like a nice little ball gown to this wedding, with a crossbody strap ruining the whole look.
We don't wear a lot of ball gowns in Seattle.
because of the rain, by the way, is raining here right now. Which is so funny.
I'm sorry for bringing it with me.
Yeah, it's your fault.
I think it is.
It is.
Yeah.
But yeah, Carissa, what's up?
Do you think that the iPhone Air might become kind of like the phone you get when you want to flex a little bit, because it does look so much different? Like, I'm thinking of when, you know, on the Android side, when like the first foldable phones came out, and it was kind of like when you saw somebody flip open their phone, you're like, whoa, they, you know, they have it. And I wonder if like the Air might just turn into that, even though it's not technically the highest end phone, but because it is a new form factor, that it's kind of the one you get when you want to like show off a little bit. Or
I've been consoling myself a little bit, because like, I know that if I were, you know, going back to my friends and like, they're like, oh my God, which one did you get or whatever? And I'll be like, well, you know, I have the Pro, not the interesting one or whatever, if I, you know, end up bringing back phones or like buying whatever. And I can imagine people being disappointed, right? Like, oh, that's the phone I got, even though it's a more expensive, the higher end phone. And the Air, to your point, Carissa, you've been bringing up F words like crazy. One was flex, the other was foldable. So, I mean, supposedly this is a very durable phone, the Air. And the flex, like you said, with earlier foldables and the LG G Flex, they all like would bend. And to a certain level, I don't know that when I held the iPhone Air in my hands, I was like, let's bend this. Like, it feels like I could crack it, right? And I've said this before, it feels like the physical manifestation of liquid glass. Because like those little bits you see in the interface touching the iPhone Air feels like grabbing one of those chips almost. So I do think it might be quite another effort, fragile. But I will say that I don't think Apple, like, I think it's very well documented that there might be foldable prototypes somewhere in an Apple office. But as an idea, as like a precursor to the foldable that Apple might be building, do you think the iPhone Air is a display of like potential, you know, grounds made there, Allison?
I think you just look at the Samsung, you know, the Galaxy Edge, and what they did with the Fold 7 this year, like how they slimmed that way down. And it's kind of like, this is probably not a coincidence, you know? So I think there's something to that of like, if you're developing that technology, I don't think Apple has figured out what to do with the non-regular base iPhone. Like, we have the iPhone mini, you know, and they put that to rest.
No, it's coming back. It has to come back.
No, don't get my hopes up, Sherlyn. And then the Plus, and
RIP.
That didn't catch on super well. My dental hygienist had one. I can't think of anyone else who did. Yeah, she was Plus owner. So I think it's kind of grounds for experimentation. It's like, well, you know, we're not upsetting anybody by like doing away with a form factor that they were loving.
I mean, I don't think they care about upsetting people. They removed the mini. Like a lot, some of us are upset.
Some are very upset.
But to your point, like the Plus wasn't the most like, it didn't make a lot of sense for it to continue to exist, right? I don't know if like I think the iPhone 17 now getting promotion is a big deal.
Yes.
I'm finally like ready to recommend it to people. I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah. Carissa also wrote a story for Engadget about the storage. Can you tell us more about that?
So I'm very excited that every new iPhone now comes with 256 gigabytes of storage as a base level.
Yes.
Which is just finally.
Yeah. Man. Would you like in the past run out? Like how quickly would you run out? Would you need to buy iCloud storage?
Okay, so
sorry, three questions at once.
I have not run out in quite a while because I think since the iPhone 10, which I had two phones ago, I have always just paid for that like that extra bump in storage, because before then with every phone, you know, inevitably you run out, it's such a pain. You can kind of use iCloud, but iCloud isn't really like a full substitution for running out of local storage. It's a huge pain. It's like the one thing that I think actually kind of I'm somebody now, I want to keep my phone as long as possible. And I feel like running out of storage is a thing that really kind of limits like your time with it. Like you, once you start hitting that cap, of course you can go and, you know, try to delete things, delete apps, you know, move stuff to iCloud. But, you know, it really becomes such a pain. And especially if you have a pro level phone, you know, you can shoot in, you know, cinematic videos and ProRAW Max and like these formats and like take advantage of like these amazing cameras. Like there's no reason why you should be limited to 128 gigs, you know, especially you're paying that much. But personally, I always try to go at least one bump up. It stings, you know, that $200 bump for storage is something that like it always like makes me mad a little bit, you know. You're like, why am I paying more for something that, you know, I can't see, it doesn't benefit you right away, but in the long run I think it's worth it. I have 512 on my current phone. I'm going strong, and I think it's gonna help me keep my phone like at least another year or two.
That's good. I mean, I think about like when I used to run out of storage and I'd be like seek out alternative methods of like keeping those things. So I would like have I still remain a big like Google ecosystem person, so I have G Drive, I have Google Photos, back those up. And back in the day, Photos was like unlimited backup or whatever, right? Yeah, so those were my creative ways around this whole like, okay, I gotta get rid of these photos approach. I would also get the lightning thumb drives, the flash drives that plug into the phone, and I'd be like, I just drop them off. But to your point, Chris, and none of these are perfect like solutions, I just want them there, because there's nothing more annoying than when you're scrolling through your Photos app and you want this picture of like some receipt from ages ago and it's like downloading or like it won't load, it was just gray.
Yeah,
it's very annoying. I don't know if did this feel like a big deal to you?
I think it is a big deal for most people who buy and use phones. I am like a weirdo who is also kind of, I still have my photos in Google Photos, and I for a while was like keeping it under the limit, and then I was like, well, I gotta pay for this now. Yeah, so, and I'm like, well, I'm paying for this, I might as well just keep, you know, loading that up on every review unit. So it is a little bit of a weird thing when you're not, like, living with a phone day to day and accumulating all the apps and all the extra stuff. But, yeah, I think in this age of, huge video files and photo modes, it's time.
I have to ask, do you have like a daily driver?
I switch my SIM
all the time
into whatever phone.
If you had a preference, though, would you?
So, the phone I purchased is iPhone 13 mini.
Oh,
and it's at home, and I like it's not allowed to travel anymore. Like the video team would kill me if I brought it to an event like this. Just the battery's no good anymore.
You're not allowed to use it. I thought just bring it with you as like a security blanket.
A support phone.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. No, I mean, I take it out of the desk drawer every once in a while
to look
like,
at it.
Hold it. Sometimes I get to use it for a week, and I'm like, oh, my old friend.
Doesn't that suck though to use such a small screen? I'm sorry. I know I put. I love the mini, but I'm also like, that screen is tiny.
Two things can be true at once. I love the mini, and also, like, it kind of sucks sometimes. Yeah.
I guess I can see why Apple no longer sells it.
I know.
I don't think that will happen with the Air, which, by the way, has a 6.5-inch screen. You see how I did that.
Nice.
Thank you. and the iPhone 17 Pro is, what, 6.3 and 6.9. I think that's an interesting way to get at the, like, screen size situation, because the 17 is 6.3, so you have now 6.3, 6.5, 6.3, 6.9, whereas the Plus before was just the same size as the Pro Max, right? And so now you have a sort of in-between option. I mean, I think that's nice. I don't need as big a screen as a 6.9. It feels unwieldy for me.
Yeah, I don't like how big it makes the whole phone feel. I think the 6.1-inch, 6.3-inch screen size, perfect.
Yes, 6.1 is perfect.
Don't touch it. That phone can be that small.
However, as I grow a bit older, I feel like maybe I need a bigger screen eventually. I don't know. I feel like my eyesight is really going. Carissa, anything stood out to you in the phone lineup, like other than your personal favorite? Like, was there anything like you felt was significant news value or like would change people's lives maybe, other than, again, also the storage?
You know, I do think that selfie camera, that new sensor is really interesting. You know, we take a lot of selfies. Like
I do.
And I feel like a lot of people do. And you have, you run into that problem. You know, we're also trained to like, you know, holding everything vertically all the time. And then being able to have it kind of do that flip. Like that was the one thing. As somebody who knew going into that event, I'm not going to be buying one of these phones. That was one of the things that I was like, oh, you know, That would kind of be nice to have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's to describe the like setup a little bit, and I think Allison, you're familiar too. It's a square sensor that is 24 megapixels, but they're only utilizing like an 18 megapixel portion that's either horizontal or vertical lens orientation, depending on, you know, when you press the button on the screen or when it detects that there are more than four faces in the scene, it'll like zoom out for you. I mean, I think that is wild, like as a like an idea. I'm like, No one had like thought of this before. And then afterwards, I heard in, you know, other people ask like, oh, but you're not, you know, is there a mode where you can use the full 24 megapixel sensor? Like it does sacrifice some of the like megapixels on the thing. But to me, I wasn't very bothered. I think it's no one's going to buy an iPhone, especially if you think about the iPhone audience. Most of them are very like mainstream. They're not overthinking the tech and the I have like six megapixels there not being used. I want to use it fully.
Right.
You know, they're not trying to squeeze every juice out of it. It's more the convenience factor for them. But I mean, no one else in the smartphone market has done this, to my knowledge.
Not that I've seen. Yeah. And especially center stage is sort of a thing that shows up on an iPad or FaceTime.
Right, to follow you around.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I don't think I want that. It's a little weird. It makes the FaceTime calls kind of like cinematic and dramatic in a way that I'm like, I don't need this. This is like the perfect application where it's like, yeah, I'm holding the phone and a cup of coffee, as we've established. I can't be setting that down and like repositioning it, and it's just going to do that for you. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a popular feature.
I mean, that is if it works as expected. I feel like I have such like I don't know. I don't trust early tech to work as expected. Mm-hmm. And until you learn how it works, it won't. But I don't know. I mean, I think that's a cool update to bring up. I don't know. I don't think it appeals to me so much. I like the idea. I really like the like thought process behind it.
Yeah.
I don't flip my phone horizontally to take selfies or group selfies a lot. I just switch to wider. I think this is a problem. My problem with the iPhone selfie camera is it never is wide enough. It always comes up so close. In fact, the focal length of all the cameras on any iPhone compared to their Android counterparts have always just felt too close for me. And that's my problem, right? And this is not a solution to that problem. This is not even a real workaround, I think. But I'm like honestly like digressing at this point. It's a very specific to me situation. Allison, what have you been hearing on the ground from your team as like one of the biggest issues for the iPhone 17 line?
Biggest issues. I mean, I think we're all concerned about the Air battery life. And that's just such a thing that people want. And it's been a topic with the previous iPhones and the pros, you know, especially the battery health running down, battery not lasting through the day once you get through a year or whatever. And it just seems like, you know, some people care about cameras, some people care about performance. Like everybody cares about their phone not dying in the middle of the day. So, you know, that's going to be a real thing to see how that plays out in real world testing and all that. And I don't know if people are going to be willing to give that up. There's so many people in the comments across both our websites, I'm sure, that are like, give me the thickest iPhone possible. I want like a sandwich, like a brick of a phone. I'm like, do you? But also, yeah.
That's so funny. I just remembered that I like put out a call on Threads to like, send me your questions for our podcast. I should look at some of them now. But Carissa, it looked like you had a thought.
Just on that, I thought it was very telling that they said it had all day battery life.
Right.
Which
classic Apple
sort of doesn't, you don't really know exactly what that means.
Right.
But then at the same time, they're bringing back the MagSafe battery, you know, which is exclusive to the iPhone Air. And I feel like that's very telling that they're making a whole special battery that, yes, was very popular when it was around on previous models, but it's only for that phone. So I feel like that's kind of telling you something about what the actual expectations for that battery should be.
I agree. However, I think the battery conversation around the Pro models is really interesting because that redesign with that camera plateau, which is a word I don't know if I hate, the fact that they're able to free up more space for battery And they seem to say that, I mean, they make this claim every year, the longest lasting iPhone ever. But I am excited to see if it really, like, can I get through what I told, I can't remember who I told this, many people now, but like, if I can make it through my entire like week without charging the iPhone 17 Pro whenever I do get to like use it real world, that would be, that's my goal. That's my target.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't want to, I'll try low power mode. Sure. Let's see if it'll make that, you know, window low power mode. And then I'll try full, you know, service and see when it gives up the ghost. But I feel like the goal is to make it through a weekend without worrying about being near an outlet. So, okay. I did pull up my questions. And one person in my threads, called Allison Joe One, says, "What is a photo, Sherlyn?" Do you think we can answer this question?
How long do we have?
You have 10 seconds to answer the question, Allison.
Photons hitting a sensor.
Cool. Okay. I guess this one's a good question for you, Allison. Someone on threads, Amarendra Bandla, I think, says, does the Air feel top heavy or is there a nice balance when you hold it in hand?
It, you know, the only thing, and it's such a weird experience where you're like rushing to the demo session and you're playing with it for 5 minutes and then rushing to do the next thing. I was just struck by just how light it felt overall and how thin it felt overall, which sounds so obvious. But, you know, when people get to pick this up and go to the Apple store and experience it for themselves, I think that'll be the overwhelming reaction.
It is so thin and it feels so good. Yeah.
I didn't feel like it was going to topple out of my hand.
I was just about
to
say that. Yeah. So from my experience with the Air as well, like I grabbed it, I played with it, I even tossed it in the air on
camera
a bit. I was like taking risks. I made sure to stand in front of like a high pile rug and I was like throwing it a bit and like it landed as you would expect and not like head first, right? It didn't come back down head first the way a top heavy device would.
Yeah.
So I think it felt pretty well balanced. I thought this question at first when I read it, I thought it was about the iPhone Pros because those have a more hefty looking plateau.
Yeah.
But I guess because the rest of the Air is so thin, that makes sense. Question for Carissa. Funky GMAC Man says, is it just me or does the bump on the iPhone Air look ridiculous? What do you think? Is it just Funky GMAC Man?
No, I think, you know, especially with a lot of Android phones, I think kind of have these more pronounced camera bumps.
Yes.
Where you see it, you know, stretch across the whole back
talking
of the phone.
Talking about the pixels, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
And other ones too.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And I think we're, at least for me, you know, I think for so long we're just used to seeing it all on the corner.
Right.
And so, like, to me, like, it does look kind of weird. I think it's one of those things we'll probably get used to and we won't think about. You know, I will say even, like I said before, even just on the, with the Pro line and everything and even with the Air, when I just, even just seeing the photos coming out after yesterday, seeing people's little videos from the, you know, the hands-on area, it does look a bit better. You know, I suspect probably in person it looks a bit better, but like it is strange. Also bumper cases coming back.
Oh my gosh.
How did you feel about that?
I love it. I hate cases. So.
I don't know if I like it. I'm like, it still feels silly. Well, look, I'm a reckless person with my phones. I go case free.
Yeah, same.
Right. And that's the way I feel. I can use my phone. I just don't like, well, we're going to go a bit deeper into my psyche right now because it is the Engadget podcast, which, let's be real, is all about me. I'm one of those people that like wipes down my phone every time I get home. Like with a sanitizing wipe. And so the cases just get in the way. They trap more dust.
Oh, they do.
They trap more dirt and germs and whatnot. So I can't. I have to live with the phone.
They have those boxes. You thought those ones with
the
UV lights?
One. Yeah. I don't know why I don't believe in them. Yeah. It's an OCD
brain. Need to
thing.
See it happening.
Yeah. No,
need to feel it. Need to have to. Yeah. But okay. Question from Reggie Langley for both of you. If someone is generally bored with slab phones, is there anything in this lineup that might bring them back to slab phones, I guess?
You know what? I put out a call for questions this summer for people who are like struggling with their phone purchase. Mm-hmm. And there were so many people who were like, I'm just bored. I'm bored with my iPhone. I'm bored with my slab phone. I think a folding phone or a flip phone is genuinely going to feel different.
Yeah.
So there are those options as far as the iPhone lineup this year. maybe the air will feel a little different and that'll be cool. But I would wait for the eye-fold or whatever is
eye-fold.
Next. Yeah.
Carissa. I think for me, you know, and a lot of people have been saying this, like the iPhone updates for all of it just felt like a bit iterative. Even with the Air, I'm not sure, like, if you're kind of in that camp, if like any of this changes it. For me at this point, it's kind of, it's more about what's keeping me in Apple's ecosystem. And that's, yep, you know, has nothing really to do with the hardware specs. It's more about, you know, being trapped in iMessage and years of iCloud and all this thing. Like, but I'm there too. I'm just waiting. I would love a Fold, a Flip even more. There's been no rumors about that as far as I know, but iPhone Flip would, yeah, like, they could just take my money.
I am with you there. And actually that brings me to a point where, like, I've been asked this a few times. You talk about the ecosystem that Apple has developed, iMessage. And I mean, Google recently had an event where, you know, it hammered home how the green bubble, blue bubble fight may be less and less important over time because of RCS support. However, we're still, I think, chained to iMessage. It's just, in the US especially, it's quite different. I will say, though, did it seem like at this iPhone events presentation, there was hardly any mention of Apple Intelligence?
Oh, yeah.
I did notice that.
Not much at all, yeah.
Was there any mention at all? Because I cannot remember. Someone asked me, I was like,
You know,
it was a blank.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of disassociate during the keynote.
Same. So that's why I'm like, we have to ask someone else, because like I'm just transcribing live vlogging.
Exactly.
If there was, it wasn't something that they lingered on. I think maybe, you know, the context of the chips or, you know, the hardware. Like there's certain elements of the hardware that, you know, can enable some, you know, more powerful stuff with Apple Intelligence. Yeah. But yeah, it was not a focus at all. I don't even think we really heard like much about Siri or
I don't think the word was mentioned. That word, no. Maybe like neural or machine learning. Yeah. But the funny thing is, like, this time last year, that's what the entire line was about, right?
It was.
So, I mean, I think that was an interesting to note. I wonder if we'll see more maybe at a later event this year or like next year, or like, I really don't know. I mean, I saw like one, you know, screenshot somewhere of visual intelligence, maybe. I think there was maybe one mention.
I think that might have been it.
And then also to shout out, live translation might be powered by ML, which is talking about the AirPods. I don't think we have much time to dive into it, but I want to talk about this other question. Doesn't have to do with only the phones and includes another product category. So the Suku says, I have been using the iPhone 16e for 2 months now. I'm already using the Watch SE, the iPad 9th gen, and the MacBook M1. I'm of the opinion that most people would be perfectly fine using entry-level devices in the Apple ecosystem. I feel that their premium devices are cash traps for norms like me. What's your take, and this for both of you and myself, on using only the SE line?
I mean, if you can do it, yeah. Like, run with it. Mm-hmm. I think my kind of philosophy is like to buy the nicest phone you can and just stick with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And if that's the entry level model, go up a level of storage, mm-hmm. give yourself a little headroom, mm-hmm. but like, yeah, you got to kind of know yourself, I guess. But mm-hmm. yeah.
I mean, this year more than ever, it feels like the entry level is the way to go. The 17, we didn't spend a lot of time talking about, but it's getting promotion. Like we said, it just modernizes the phone. The storage improvements, the camera improvements, it's a dual fusion rear cameras now and 48 megapixels on both sensors. So if you're talking entry level, iPhone 17 seems like a good purchase, especially considering you jump up to $999 for the Air and then $1,100 for the Pro. That's a lot of money. And I want to shout out quickly, because I'm the wearables reviewer on our team, one of them. The Apple Watch SE 3 has an always-on display.
Yeah, that rules.
You're not missing a lot out of this. It also supports 5G for those of you who care about 5G on your watch. But yeah, and faster charging, finally. Carissa, you have you ever used the Watch SE, or like you're using a Series 5 watch right now, right?
Yeah.
How long does it take you to charge that thing?
A while, and the battery does not last long, let me tell you.
See?
It does not sometimes last through my entire workout.
My goodness. I would be so mad.
It's upsetting.
Yeah.
But yeah, the SE is great. They also are adding a lot of the health tracking stuff, like sleep apnea notifications. Right. It's going to do the wrist temperature sensor.
So that supports cycle tracking for people who need that,
So I think it's like a great deal, honestly, because I think, you know.
It is $250.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard. I mean, maybe you really want those like more advanced features.
So
like
ECG, blood oxygen, those are the things you would get with the Series 11.
Yeah. And there's definitely a set of people that those like might make sense for, but especially, you know, Apple really hammered this home in their, you know, press materials about it, that like a lot of people buy Apple Watches for their kids. Mm-hmm. And like, this is a great watch for kids, or, you know, even potentially like older people who don't need as many features. It can last a long time. Like, yeah. I think it's...
I'm giggling because I'm thinking of my target audience for the SE3. Hi, mom. Hi, dad. My mom has a gigantic Fitbit on her wrist. Government issued, I'm sure, from the Singapore government. And it's like, it looks like she's got a Digimon strapped to her hand. Digimon from the early 2000s, too. So I'm like, mom, what? So if I were to get her something, it would be something like the SE3. $250, if it ever goes on sale, down to maybe $200. I would get that, right? Yeah. And even for me, I don't need ECG. I don't need blood oxygen. I mean, I think I don't need it, but you know, it's nice to have. I'm also lucky that I like have better access to these things. But yeah, it does sound like the answer to the Suku's question is yes. You can absolutely live the entry level life. But would you, Allison?
Oh, well, as an iPhone 13 mini owner.
That you do not use, and you use as emotional support only. So let's be real here.
Yeah, I think I've gotten too spoiled by like a telephoto camera, especially. Yeah. Like, I don't super mind it when I go back down to just the regular and the ultra wide, but there are those moments when I'm like, I want a telephoto here.
You attend a lot of sporting events or concerts.
Well, I have a 4-year-old, which is a full contact sport.
Touch rugby, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just like constantly taking pictures of him. And yeah, it's turned me into a portrait photographer.
Okay, we can talk about portrait mode all day. Carissa, though, would you live in entry level? I mean, you are on a Series 5, so honestly, at this point, the SE3 would be an upgrade for you. But
It would. Yeah, I would. Because as much as somebody who's not, I don't love to wear an Apple Watch like all the time.
Same.
I don't love to wear any watch all the time. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of honestly why I've been stuck with the Series 5, is because it just felt a little like not worth it to spend the money for something I mostly only use for like working out. And so, you know, being able to have like an SE that has like a few more of those health features that I want, it also has better battery life. Yep. It's going to charge faster. Mm-hmm. It's like 15 minutes of charging will give you 8 hours.
Yeah,
life.
Yeah. Like I can vouch for the charging speed improvement when I jump from the Series 8 to Series 9. Huge upgrade in the charging speed. Much better. To the point where, like, if I have to go back to the slows, I just would rather not work out. That's a big thing for me. But you would do the Series. So should we get your Series 3? Like SE3? Should we figure out how to make that on your Apple wish list, your holiday?
Yeah, if anyone's watching,
I know.
And watching this, like, exactly. Hey.
Well, I'll clip this and send it to you. Yeah. Like, or we'll be like, oh, we'll see if there's a way to do like a team giveaway. Okay, we don't have much time left. I wanted to talk not just about what we've seen and heard at the event here, which, by the way, I don't know if you guys feel like you want to talk about live translation or heart rate sensing on the AirPods. If you do, let's talk about it now. But if not, I'm moving on to like future looking things.
Let's move to the future.
Let's set an eye on the future. Carissa, what are your hopes and dreams for next year's iPhone event? Fold?
Of course. I mean, okay, my best case scenario, which I know is not going to happen, is a flip.
I know. Me too.
Yes.
Me too.
I've had so much envy of everyone who has like the Razer or
the Samsung.
The Samsung one. Yeah. Like, so I really want one, but I know it's gonna happen. In the absence of that, a fold I think would be really nice. It'd be cool to see, you know, Samsung's been doing this for what, 7 years now?
Yep.
You know, to see Apple finally get there, I think that's really gonna, you know, break the dam on foldables. Mm. I know a lot of people are already there, but I think just even though it's probably, you know, the most expensive iPhone we've ever seen, I'm sure there'll be issues we haven't thought about yet, but I think just seeing Apple get there will be really kind of like a signal that like, okay, this is sort of, if not the new norm, a new norm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, well, for me, when I think about Apple and foldables, I think about every time I look at an iPad mini, I'm like, fold that in half.
Yes.
Are you thinking that size and form factor, Chris? Or are you think? I know you said flip, but like, are you thinking more like two iPhone Airs connected by a hinge?
Yes.
But like one single screen.
Yeah. Maybe you have like that cover screen kind of deal too.
Right.
I think it's also going to be really interesting from the perspective of the like app ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Because foldables have been around on Android for a long time. And there are apps and developers that have really gone in on making those kind of like foldable specific experiences. But we haven't seen that much on that front. And I think, especially in the app world, you always see that a lot of developers wait until Apple does something before they really kind of tune their apps to that, you know, that those new UIs or those new features. So I think if we do see Apple get into it, all of a sudden we'll see developers do like a lot more creative things with having those extra screens. It could enable some really interesting things on that front. So like as somebody who used to write about software and services, like that's like something that like I would really nerd out on seeing kind of like what might actually be possible from a software perspective once you have like those extra screens, that extra real estate space. Mm-hmm.
What, I mean, we just got Instagram for iPad recently. Maybe that's a precursor. Maybe that's a sign we've all been waiting for.
Yeah.
A foldable is coming. Allison, what's your hopes and dreams for the next iPhone event?
Same fold. And like, I share the flip envy every time I use a flip phone and move off of it. I'm like, oh, that was so nice. Like, it was so great. But, you know, I also have this thing where I don't really... I like a tablet. I like it, the iPad.
Right.
I don't really ever use one. Like, I don't know. I'm not going to carry it around with me. It feels sort of like, well, there's cool features there and it's nice for watching something, but it doesn't really fit into my life. So if I could have like a phone that became an iPad and then I would have access to a big screen or, you know, read books or write a note or whatever, I'm like, now we're talking.
Write a note. You're saying like the Apple Pencil situation with a. I feel like we're talking about reasons why the Fold isn't ready. We're talking about very important software interface layout things. We're talking about potential writing capabilities, and that would be technological challenges. So maybe not next year. Maybe if we were to place bets, Powerball situation. I know you're a betting person, Carissa. What year? Sorry, we're actually a friendly team and we have fun. So
that's true. She's been in Vegas with me, so she
I have been to.
Oh,
whereas Vegas. Allison, we're just competition, you and I, and so we're not friendly enough. So we're what year would you bet? Like, let's put it on the record now, and then I'll bet you $50.
I think 2026.
Serious?
I don't know if we'll actually see it,
but announced.
like I think it'll be announced. I don't know if they'll actually like be selling it by this time next year, but if we haven't seen something from them on it, then I think something might be wrong.
Okay, so like a tease at least, like some kind of official preview teaser at least. Okay, all right, $50, fine, for by 2026. I'm not gonna place bets with Allison, however. Do you want to take Carissa on that?
I'm gonna agree. I'm gonna go with that bet. Okay. Next year's the year. We're going to be in this location a year from now talking about the iFold.
iFold. So you saying iFold is the name?
I'm going to call a name. I'm going to say next year Anna's going to be the iFold.
I think it will be Apple Fold. No, actually, I don't know. I don't think they'll find the word fold.
iPhone Fold.
iPhone Fold.
You got to just go iFold.
Fair enough. I guess. Okay, look. So my hopes and dreams for the next iPhone event has nothing to do with phones and has everything to do with a ring. Put that ring on my finger, Apple. Like, I would really like, I don't know how far, I don't think 2026 is the year, but I think that we're inching closer and closer to all the smartwatch makers that currently exist that are dominating to make a ring. And I hate wearing the watch to bed, but I desperately need to track my sleep. I, like, just love it. And I think there is a lab somewhere, Cupertino or wherever, that like has a ring in it and is tracking things and finding out what to do. On all the features that Apple says are, you know, Apple Watch does well, are those background tracking, passive tracking features. Rings do those extremely well. I do not need a screen. I just need you to track everything that's up with me and buzz if there's something wrong. Tell my phone to tell me if there's something wrong. Tell me to see my doctor. Also, track all my workouts and do so correctly and accurately. Would you wear an Apple ring?
I think I would. I sort of have the opposite thing, though. I like the screen. I like the quick access to notifications. I like that. The surprising thing for me when I started wearing a watch was that it sort of frees you up from your phone. I thought I would feel more tethered to my phone, where I was like, God, this thing's buzzing me all the time now. But I can like leave my phone in some part of the house and just go about unencumbered, but I'll still get the text message at my
husband's. Still see it. Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. A ring would be cool. I sort of need the ring to work across all the platforms that I'm constantly switching between. But it's a solid case. Yeah.
Yeah. Carissa, would you, wear another ring?
Yes, I would. I've come so close to buying an Aura ring this year. Like, I've had it in my car like at least 2 or 3 times. And then I just was like, I'm going to wait. You know, it's a little too much money. The subscription kind of puts me off.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that.
Like, I don't mind spending the money, but being stuck in that subscription. Also, I want the gold one, which costs more, and that also pisses me off.
Same.
You can buy paint.
I think that would mess up the sensors. But yeah, like, I want a ring. If Apple made one, like, absolutely. Because my thing with, like I said, I don't like to wear a watch. I've never been a watch person. I still just think smartwatches in general, like, don't look that nice. They've come a long way with, you know.
Well, not in the Apple ecosystem. They're all square faces.
Yeah, like strap designs. You know, I don't want something that's like looks so obvious. You know, a ring that would be really nice. It's subtle. Doesn't have a screen. It doesn't flash weirdly. You know, you're not in a meeting and it just lights up for some reason.
The other thing that I really like about the idea of Apple making a ring is that it already got all my historical workout data. And Apple is very good about, you know, keeping all of that historical data, but also not compromising your security as much as others might. And I would like to retain all of that info. I would like to watch my progress over the years. Like, I used to work out at this level, and I work out at this level, and I've dropped a bit, but I've gone up a bit. And adding a ring to that mix feels like Apple has the best ability. I mean, like, I think about other players in this space. Aura has none of my historical information, and Aura I've used on and off, and I think they're good. Samsung has the Galaxy Ring. I really like the Galaxy Ring. It feels good, easy to use, comfortable, and picks up every single walk I go on like it's a magician in my hair or something.
Question for you though, because I know you lift. Do you wear a ring while you lift?
It's harder to lift.
It's kind of a risk, isn't it?
You're right. It's very hard. So I always wear a glove, though, so because I don't like the calluses. But even then, you're right. Like, the dead hangs, the pull-ups. Slight flex. you're completely right. I don't know that I would enjoy wearing a ring on my workouts. But it is for the sleep tracking. It is for the passive activity. So that's the thing, Allison, to your point. I wouldn't sub the watch for a ring. Mm-hmm. I would add on with a ring.
Yeah.
It's a supplement.
Yeah. And maybe you don't want the watch on all the time. Like, if I am going to a nice event or something, take it off. But then it's sort of like, well, I have no idea. You know, I'm not getting credit for all the walking I'm doing.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
I hate that.
I think this is a good place to sort of start to bring it to a close, which is full circle, is my OCD. I am just like, the OCD of losing your data will not work. Okay. The other OCD is a ring is so much easier to clean than a watch. You wipe it. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
It's quick. A watch is like,
yeah, they get gunky.
They do.
I need the fabric band too.
And you cannot clean that thing. No. That's why I'm wearing these, because the silicone, the rubberized ones are so much easier to wipe down. So welcome to OCD Chats with Sherman. Well, thank you for joining us today, Allison. I've loved our chill chat about Apple's phones and other devices.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Do you like us? Are we good? Are we cool?
Yeah, can we hang out some more?
I think we should hang out in
2026.
Mini golf and DDR?
Maybe please.
Karaoke? Carissa casinos or something? Okay.
I'm in.
You're in? Okay, cool. Right. Allison, where can people find you online?
I am Allison Joe 1 on...
Oh, that sounds familiar. Huh.
It just so happened to be on Threads in Sherlyn's mentions. So you can find me there.
You can find her there.
Yeah. Instagram also, if you enjoy pictures of mini golf courses and 4-year-olds.
Lovely. Carissa, where are you online?
I'm Carissa BE at Blue Sky and Threads, mostly on Threads. Pretty much every platform, although I don't really post on X these days.
Can people take bets with you, like place bets with you about 2026 for iFold?
Yeah, you know, I heard that Polymark is coming to the U.S., so maybe we can, like...
Ooh, I got to plug Yahoo's Yahoo Bets or something like
that. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I am at Shrillinstagram, Chrillynstagram on Threads, Instagram, and Engadget.com, the best publication on the internet, bar none.
Thanks to Sherlyn and crew for all that, by the way. Let's move on to some other news. And the first thing that caught my eye this week is this movie called Critters. As the Wall Street Journal first reported, Critters is going to be a full-length animated film using OpenAI's technology. I think the budget is around $30 million. They want it to look like a typical CG film, but those things tend to cost $100 million plus because there's a lot of work that goes into that. A lot of artistry work, a lot of rendering work. It takes time. And it seems like Critters is going to try to make something on that level for a lot less money with the power of AI. I don't feel good about this. They also kind of called their own shot. They say they want to debut at the Cannes Film Festival.
The Cannes Film Festival that's known for like 10-minute standing ovations or 10-minute boos? You're just going to open yourself up to that possibility?
The famously non-judgmental French people.
Yeah.
You're going to bring this movie there. I think they're basically waiting to be torn apart. What's interesting is that it, you know, has actual writers. I believe the writers of Paddington 3. Have provided
that's the only thing about this movie that makes me excited, that at least they're not getting a script that was generated by ChatGPT, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's at least something. But then it's going to be at least a script with AI visuals. I am personally not a fan of this. This feels like the first step towards what people really want AI for, is just like producing cheap content. You don't have to worry about the artistry of it. You don't have to worry about all the human labor that goes into it. If you could just, hey, you have a script. Let's turn that script into an easy peasy CG movie and maybe win some awards. And to me, that feels incredibly cynical. I've seen a lot of like AI video and AI animation at this point. I still think it looks disgusting. And I think whenever we talk about this stuff, I go back to the Miyazaki quote, right? I don't have the full one pulled up, but the idea of when somebody showed off like an artificially generated caterpillar, CG caterpillar, his big takeaway was like, I feel like this is an affront to life itself. And his full quote is pretty great. He's like, I'm not into this stuff. If you guys want to play with it, fine, whatever. But I think we are going to be talking a bit more about humanity and the idea of human-powered art and how that differs from the stuff that you're going to be seeing from a lot of these anybody like touting AI tools. And you're even seeing that now in ads. Like, you can really tell when an ad uses AI footage or AI characters. There was that there's that like AI woman created for an ad, I think, for some European company, who looks very realistic. So things are going to be getting there. It's a little uncanny. But I think for now, I'm not a fan. I don't know. We'll be keeping an eye on like whatever happens with this thing. The movie's called Critters, and they hope to debut at the 2026 Cannes Film Festival, which I also don't know how you can just call that shot, because I think you have to be accepted into the festival like while having a completed work. Another story that just hit, Blue Sky is rolling out age verification in South Dakota and Wyoming. This is kind of interesting because Blue Sky opted to go dark completely in Mississippi due to their age verification laws. I think what's interesting about these other states is that they're going to still allow you to use Blue Sky to some degree. If you're not verified, you'll just get access to more stuff if you verify that you're an adult. This is all early stuff. We're trying to figure out like how all these companies are going to work with age verification laws throughout the U.S. and other countries too. Let me see here, because Blue Sky also did something similar in the UK, where basically lets you use some of the service and then you get more of it once you verify. In the US, Blue Sky is using Epic Games Kids Web Services to conduct the checks, and users can choose between several methods, including like ID scans and credit card checks. So, you know, that's going to be a way to do it.
I don't think Epic would ever have been able to expect that this would be like a good sideline for their business. Like, they were just like, we need to make this because we need to keep, like, seven-year-olds off of Fortnite.
Sort of. Yeah, I mean, that's probably it. I do feel like, you know, maybe the internet was just always going to lead this way, too, like, to balkanize the internet a little bit and add more gateways to it. The idea of a free-flowing, you know, fire hose of news and information that come out to everybody at the same time, it was a noble dream. But I do feel like in many ways it's getting torn apart a little bit. We'll see. We'll see what's happening there. But at least, hey, Blue Sky is not fully leaving South Dakota and Wyoming. But if you're in Mississippi, you've got no Blue Sky. That's unfortunate. Ben, you really wanted to talk about the story from Inception Point AI, which basically wants to flood the zone. I hate that term. But flood the zone with AI slop podcasts? I don't. 5,000 podcasts, 3,000 episodes a week. $1 per episode is the basic pitch in the headline from The Hollywood Reporter. Who's going to listen to this stuff? Like, I don't understand the pitch here. Yeah.
Obviously, this is deeply offensive to me and all of my podcast friends. So the idea is exactly as you said. It's to make a lot of podcasts with a lot of ads in the front, middle, and end so that you make money via volume, not quality. And I feel like I've gotten stuck in a lot of like AI skeptic ruts recently. So here's a bunch of reasons why this is a bad idea without even talking about anything regarding AI and like copyright and the amount of energy used, so on and so on.
On a practical level, this seems like a bad idea.
So the first thing that they said is that they want to make these AI hosts into full-blown internet personalities, influencers, whatever you want to call it. Devendra, do you remember Lil Miquela?
I do.
Do you remember FN Mecca?
Sort of.
Of course you don't. These are two failed attempts at making virtual influencers that were a flash in the pan. Like, they got a bunch of followers, maybe because there were a couple of like big splashy articles about it. But I mean, I went back to the Instagram page for Lil Miquela, like this virtual fashion influencer. 2 million Instagram followers and tens of comments. Some of these comments were saying, man, you guys are really trying to keep this going in 2025? That's crazy. So there's that.
I'm going to not knock the idea entirely of AI influencers just because I do think that's going to happen eventually. We are seeing like AI produced pop stars essentially, or fake pop stars. So we're going to get some sort of like Macross plus Sharon Apple thing happening at some point, but you can't force it like this.
The big case study that I think everyone is working from is, of course, Gorillaz.
Yes.
Like, the Gorillaz characters have their own Instagram pages. You could actually get them to, you know, do a Prada ad or something, but that's because they've been working at this for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. It was really cool when they started, because I remember when Gorillaz first popped up, we're like, who are these guys? They've got cool anime music videos, so I'm down with this. But it was interesting then, yeah.
But the only way that you can really make a significant amount of money having, you know, Noodle or 2D or something in a high fashion ad is because they have, you know, the business term brand equity that has been built up over a really, really long period of time. Something that a podcast industry friend of mine says a lot is that everybody wants a serial, but nobody wants to make This American Life for 20 years in order to like launch that huge moment that Serial had. I think it's the same situation with these virtual influencers. Then they say, if each of these, you know, 5,000 episodes a week that they're producing gets, you know, just 15 or 20 downloads, then they are cost positive on a per unit basis. For
garbage.
Okay. Yeah. Like, they just want to be cost positive on each episode. And I can't tell you how insane this is, because this also like milks the programmatic ad market
for
all it's worth. If you're not familiar with like what programmatic ads, dynamic ad insertion, or anything is, just think about any time you've listened to a podcast and the ads that you were listening to were like very discordant to the actual episode that you're interested in. So if you're listening to something like, say, I don't know, a sports podcast, and all of a sudden there's an ad that's talking about like gardening, that's a dynamically inserted ad. They're like, there are probably enough people who like want to buy Miracle-Gro listening to the sports podcast. Usually these ads are also made by like these big production houses that also do like over-the-air radio commercials. So like the tone is all weird.
That's what they're trying to get here. The ads, by the way, Ben, where they are directly responding to your content now, not just being like, hey, you may like Miracle-Gro. I have seen ads listening to a whole bunch of shows right now. I think Waypoint is the Remap Radio folks, who used to be Waypoint, but they have had ads where it's like, oh yeah, that game does sound cool. Now let's talk about this product. And it's all algorithm, like it's all generated.
Yeah.
The ad is responding to the content in the show and then presenting an ad, trying to hoof in an ad, like in a really awkward way.
That might be what they're trying to do in the longer term. What they're trying to do right now is just like milk the programmatic market for all it's worth. But if you're doing it at the scale that they're planning on doing with like 5,000 episodes a week, that is going to end up driving the rates down for not only human podcasters, but this business itself.
Inception Point
is going to find diminishing returns because they're making content for ad slots rather than making something that actually like hooks people in.
It's creating an awful aftertaste for consumers too, like for people who are looking for things to listen to. You're going to start to hear like, oh, this is just AI garbage. This can push people away from the idea of podcasting entirely. I could go listen to an audiobook. I don't have to deal with this stuff.
It feels like people have been pushed away from the idea of podcasting like during the pandemic. You know, it's no longer the like delicately told story. When you say podcast, it's no longer the delicately told story about what it means to be human that like I'm really into from like my public radio background. It's like guys with backward baseball hats calling people females and like talking about their bad opinions.
But that's talk radio versus like, you know, informative journalism and stuff like that. And that's always been the case in the world of radio. That's like FM versus AM practically at this point. I want to point out there are some images. I'm looking at the Hollywood Reporter here. The images at the top of the story for this company, the AI generated podcast host named Claire Delish, who looks like standard Instagram model lady. Ollie Bennett looks like the guy from Uncharted. They just copied the guy from Uncharted. And a man in a straw hat and suit and a perfectly white beard named Nigel Thistledown.
I listened to Nigel Thistledown's podcast because as your intrepid producer, I need to like know what I'm talking about. And the first thing that caught my eye is that I listened to the trailer. Like people who work in radio are like, why are we working so hard on trailers? Like usually people don't listen to them.
You got to hook people in somehow. Yeah.
You have to hook people in. I liked listening to a trailer because it serves as a thesis statement for why the podcast exists. If you have a really good trailer, that means that you've thought through what you want to say on the show enough that, you can make something that will really like pull someone in. Usually there are never, ever, ever ads on trailers because why would you do that?
Right.
The trailer itself is like 30 seconds. This trailer for the AI podcast Garden had dynamic ads on it. So even the trailer is like, this is ad space. We can fit like three ads in this baby. Slaps roof of podcast.
We're not talking down against the idea of dynamic ads because we use them. We have to use them to survive in this world. You kind of have to, but also we are thoughtful about
that's
it.
The way things work right now, but not if this company has its druthers. We're going to see less and less money because the market is just going to be so saturated with stuff that people aren't listening to overall.
I'd also wager, like I help run a fairly popular podcast, and dynamic ads don't do anything. They don't really do much business. You get money from actual sponsored ads, like partnerships with other brands, and like the stuff that requires salespeople to go out and make deals, or companies to pitch the platform you're on to be like, hey, do you want to be part of this like ad campaign for this thing? That all takes work. That's all human work. The dynamically generated stuff earns people pennies. It's like trying to make money from Spotify streams. It doesn't really work. Yep.
I also listened to like one of the longer episodes in Garden because the trailer was actually kind of interesting. They were talking about like Victorian flower language and all of that. Like, I thought, okay, if you can make a AI-generated episode about something kind of interesting like that, why not? So I go and listen, and it just feels like AI wrote this. You know, this is very interesting. Actually, like, it's just so fascinating. We're going to get into something really interesting here. God. Like, there's just so much wind-up. It feels like it's a student trying to pad their term paper for length. Rather than actually good, I don't want to say content, but I have to say content, good content.
Yeah. It's we're already seeing this on YouTube, by the way. Like, this is, so many YouTube videos are kind of that, of like breathless AI voice trying to deliver facts, building up to the point that the title has or something, but it takes forever to get there. Dude Named Charlie in the chat points this out. Like, yeah, YouTube videos and voice is nuts. I'm running into them all the time. I spend a lot of time on YouTube. I don't really exist on like normal TV anymore. And it sucks. Like, you're really only safe if you're watching channels that you subscribe to that you know and like. Like, stay in the lane of good content. Otherwise, if you go out to the wilds of YouTube, it's all slop. It's slop as far as the eye can see. And these folks just want to make that true for podcasting.
And we're not even talking about like AI-generated music.
Right.
Because that was its own trend cycle a few weeks ago. I think that was when the podcast was on summer break. If you go into a restaurant and that restaurant has like a big TV playing, you know, random, you know, bossa nova compilation or something on YouTube, there is a good chance at this point that that music is AI generated. It's just good enough to act as a like audio wallpaper as you have your meal, and someone in Bangladesh is making money off of those YouTube views.
I hate this because it's going to be AI all the way down, right? You're going to be going to that restaurant listening to AI generated music, dealing with a dynamic menu that's priced depending on the time of the day and the popularity of this dish, and the dish is going to be vetted based on online, you know, influencer ratings and whatever. You're going to be there with like influencers as well. Like, this is a terrible future. This is a
welcome
bad
to
world
Night City, Chooms.
It's Night City meets the Back to the Future 2 future. Which is, man, okay, this is all very sad. You're in the podcasting game, Ben. Like, how do you feel about podcasting as a medium right now? Because I've been doing this for a while. I've been listening to them since the inception of podcasting. I've been so fascinated with it. I've ridden the wave of like early popularity, and now it just seems like the big money came in for like comedians and comedy podcasts and the big names who got a lot of money. And now it's just like, how can we AI-fy it? How can we build up the slop more? I don't know what
we don't have enough time for me to talk about like how I actually feel about all.
That's
of
a whole
this.
Other episode. Okay,
that's also not the Engadget podcast. That's Ben talks about radio for like 6 hours. I think that the toothpaste is out of the tube in a good way. That people have brought podcasts into their lives and they want to find information that they can put in their ears. That's the basic idea behind Inception Point AI. In the article, they talk about Pollen Report podcasts. And like, if we can get just 50 people listening to this Pollen Report podcast for, you know, the area around Asheville, North Carolina, then we're unit positive on this episode. But that's coming from...
Is that a real thing, Pollen Report podcasts?
They were talking about that in the episode, yes. And the entire like idea behind this company, Inception Point, was because one of the founders started a podcast where they just read CDC reports in the middle of the pandemic lockdown. That was also like a really weird time for like being online and making stuff, making content online to begin with. Everybody was super bored. Nobody was like going outside doing their normal stuff that they were used to. And they were also like very, very conscious about their health. So basing an entire company 5 years after pandemic lockdown on like a very specific thing that happened in, you know, a 6 month time span also seems kind of weird.
Everything
regardless
about this seems weird.
People are still interested in putting stuff in their ears. They're interested in good conversations, and they're interested in the delicately told stories about what it means to be human. Some people never knew anything about This American Life or any of those other documentary style podcasts before this big podcast boom. That's great. We just need to connect the people and the money again, because ad rates aren't really doing it.
This American Life
recently started doing a direct subscription, you know, sort of like a Patreon they made themselves. And we'll see what happens with that.
I thought they had like a fan club type of thing before. I know Radiolab did. Radiolab had done that way back, like a decade ago, where you could pay to be like a Radiolab member. Welcome to Night Vale. A lot of the big shows have had like memberships that get you access to the full archives and things like that. So I guess we have to everybody has to rethink these things. But for me, fundamentally, what is interesting about podcasts is that it is like the last remaining thing that relies on the glory and purity of RSS, right?
Like, and even Spotify is trying to own the concept of that's where you put your podcast. So
yeah, Spotify is like the AOL of the podcast industry, of trying to like wall garden in this stuff. But folks, don't forget, like the idea of podcasting came about when somebody was like, huh, look at these really simple syndication feeds. What if I just throw a media file in there? And who is it? Was it Dave Weiner? Like those folks back in the day, it just became
the first
a thing.
Podcast was radio open source. And so the first podcast ever was a tech podcast.
Of course, because the techies had to figure it out.
Yeah.
But to me, that is sort of still the beauty of podcasting. It's like, no matter what reader you have, if it is a true podcast, it has an RSS feed, and you can plug that in your thing, and you can listen to it. And now it's more complicated because you can have membership feeds or require, you know, they're going to be individualized, and you have to go to a Patreon or something to get it. But the core of podcasting is RSS. It's really simple syndication. It's getting information out there easily to people. And that's what we used to do before social media, to be honest, or before like the rise of Web 2.0 social media. There's still some sort of beauty there, but I don't know. We need to take like the whole industry needs a thing. I've been thinking there is no like Google. There's no way to like Google through all podcasts. There's no way to like search through podcasts.
Yeah, Devendra, we can't get into this because
we need to
talk.
That's our startup idea.
At length about like how there isn't podcast discovery. How
it's terrible.
One of the reasons that podcasts have pivoted to video is because people were just like, oh, actually, we can get the like right rail YouTube recommendation algorithm to suggest podcasts. Like,
for sure,
we've solved the problem of podcast discovery because we're just going to let YouTube do it. But then that also means that we need video. And that also means that like making a show is going to become like five times more expensive than it was to just
Trust
turn on
me.
Microphones.
We are so, well aware of this issue as well.
The be all and end all of this before we get to the HBO Max story is pay for your content. Do the little subscription on Patreon. If you like any sort of show that has a Patreon, do the lowest tier subscription. If it's $2 a month or something, $20 a year makes sense, and you're really helping someone who's super duper passionate about making this show for you continue to make it as their prime job.
Pay for your content, pay for your creators, ideally creators who aren't tied to like massive corporations, because those are the podcasts that kind of deserve the money more. But you know, pay for it, and also leave reviews, engage. Like if you like something, share it, say it. It makes a big difference. Like just from my side of things, it makes a big difference as a creator, and also makes a big difference to the people in charge of like who enable the fact that, you know, we can even make a podcast. So anyway, good story.
Let's get to HBO Max.
Everybody's favorite media executive David Zaslav is saying HBO Max is gonna get a lot more expensive. He thinks it's undervalued because he thinks their content is great. Here's the quote. The fact that this is quality, and that's true across our company, motion picture, TV production, streaming quality, we all think that gives us a chance to raise prices. We think we're way underpriced. They most recently raised prices in 2024. Reading from our article right now, you can get a basic HBO Max, not just Max, HBO Max subscription with ads for $10 a month. Ad-free premium costs $20.99 a month. If you want 4K, you have to pay even more, which I'm doing because I'm a sucker for that. I think it's over like $25 at this point. I could easily see adding a $5 to all those prices, you know, and making people pay over $30 a month for the 4K. Because Zaslav is just a greedy executive who, you know, he wants the revenue increase. He doesn't care how people actually feel about it. So we will see. Do you have any thoughts
streaming
on that?
Streaming is overall just getting more expensive.
It is.
Like, we're just redoing cable plans. And people used to complain about like a $150 a month cable bill, right? And we're just like creeping back up in that direction.
Yeah. It is. Everything's getting more expensive. The flip side of our advice is just now to like pay for the content you like and the creators you like. You know, don't forget to cancel your streaming subs when you don't need them. Yeah, that's how I live through Peacock and Paramount and all those different services. Like, if they don't have a show you're watching right now, cancel it until you do, because that's just money in the bank, basically. But yeah, everybody loves David Zaslav. This guy must wonder why everybody boos him whenever he walks into a restaurant, right? Just like the Trump folks entering a restaurant. Why does everybody hate me? I don't know. I don't get it.
I was saying Boo Earns. I was saying Zaslav.
I was saying higher content prices. Why is everybody getting mad at me? That means more for me. That means more revenue. Let's move on to what we're working on. I wrote a piece about NVIDIA's GeForce Now with RTX 5080 GPUs. I forget if I mentioned this before, but the piece is up now. The GeForce Now stuff works really well. So my main recommendation is, if you are a gamer, it is probably worth spending $10 a month through the GeForce Now 1440p connection, just to be like, hey, you could play your games anywhere in your home too, like your games from Steam and all the major storefronts. You could play them on a Steam Deck. You can play them on a laptop if you're bored at work and you have the ability to play during time off. Like, you can get some gaming time in. Super useful. And it is cool that the ultimate price is still $20 a month, and that one gets you, for some games, gets you RTX 5080's level quality. I've been playing it on my gaming rig here, so I've had a lot of time of like looking at games being powered by an RTX 5090, 5080, 5070, all the high-end stuff, and I've had a hard time telling the difference between this streamed quality and the stuff happening locally. That's pretty wild. The big downside is that it takes a lot of bandwidth, you know, for the... You don't need the horsepower, but you need the bandwidth, because the new 5080 plan supports up to 100 megabits per second. So that means at times my stream was hovering between 60 to 80 megabits, just sucking in video data to look smooth, to keep the frame rate low, to keep the like lag and latency low. That is the big downside. GeForce Now and all the streaming services will work best in a world where the internet is perfect, and then you'll have access to everything. But if you have any hiccups, if you have a Wi-Fi issue, if you have any internet connectivity issue, that means no gaming. So that is still a big downside. But I've talked to people who have gaming rigs and have like older GPUs. Buying an RTX 5080 right now costs at least $1,200. That is a really powerful GPU. On your current gaming rig, you could just like pay $20 a month for GeForce Now and get like a good quality graphical upgrade. That'll still look good on your monitor too, because they support up to 4K 120 hertz now and 1080p 360 hertz. That's what you want for like a Twitch shooter. So I was playing Overwatch 2, looked good. Cyberpunk looked incredible. If you have the bandwidth, if you have strong internet, I think it's totally worth it, and kind of a no-brainer for anybody who really, really loves games. I would have loved this in school. I would have loved this, like, man, things are just so much different now.
The other side of it, though, is which college students actually have money for a monthly subscription. I remember being broke as a joke.
I mean, sure. For sure. For those that have gaming rigs or, you know, pay attention to gaming, it's people find money for the games, unfortunately. So I was just thinking of like what I could do. Like I had an on-campus job. If you there were ways to survive college, but you had to work at it, unfortunately. Let's move on to our picks for the week. Why don't you go, Ben? Because I've been talking for a while.
So I think I talked about the McGee album. That's MK.GEE album, Two Star and the Dream Police, a few weeks ago. It's like a very sensual guitar album. I saw a bunch of people online saying that it brought back the great tradition of not knowing what the hell that white boy is saying. Like, kind of croonery, R&B inspired. The people at the Popcast at the New York Times were like, well, finally, sexy guitar music is back. And I totally agree. I really, really enjoyed it. It was one of my top albums of last year. And so my big pick for everybody this week is the collaboration between McGee and this R&B artist, Dijon. This has been something that's been going back and forth for a number of years. They met, I think, a little bit before the pandemic. McGee helped Dijon on his first album, Absolutely. The video for Absolutely, there's like a little mini movie that recreates kind of the conditions in which Absolutely was recorded. So it's just like a bunch of people hanging out in a very cozy, like living room sort of setting. Of course, they redid all of this stuff on a soundstage. And it just feels like really earthy and natural, and you get to see Dijon just like singing his heart out. The veins are popping out of his neck. He's talking about love and loss, and it was like transfixing for a lot of people. I think it was one of those albums that made a lot of industry people take notice. And I also think that it informed McGee's album, Two Star, because he wasn't doing like a super sexy singing voice before he started working with Dijon. Dijon recently released another album called Baby. It was super well received by like music critics. To be quite honest, it's a little bit of a too experimental R&B album for me. But I'm so happy these guys are getting the press and like recognition inside the music industry that I think they deserve. Both of them worked a little bit with Bon Iver on his most recent album, Sable Fable. And then Justin Bieber released two albums so far this year, Swag and Swag 2, that feature heavy production credits by McGee and Dijon. Dijon co-writes and features on a song. I'm just so happy for these guys. And if you like kind of alternative R&B, alternative like guitar and stuff that honestly sounds kind of like The Police and like sexy 80s music, go check out McGee and go check out Dijon for the alt R&B stuff.
I do miss sexy 80s music. That's the whole vibe. But thank you, Ben. I have a couple things I want to mention. Like everybody else in the world, I'm playing Silk Song. Silk Song is good. Silk Song is tough. And it is definitely getting me back in that groove. Like it was kind of an indescribable groove with me for Hollow Knight. I've played tons of Metroidvanias. You know, I love the genre because it makes people really consider the joys of 2D gaming. I have distinct memories of playing Super Metroid and Symphony of the Night. So it's like that stuff, the fact that we've kept this genre alive, I think is beautiful. And I'll play like every iteration of it. But there was something about Hollow Knight that was just like a perfect blend of like gameplay and atmosphere and music. It's a gloomy game, but it felt really chill and peaceful to me. And I think I was playing it like during pandemic time too. So it was like a way to just chill my brain. Silk Song is a lot of that again, but also more acrobatic, more platforming in ways I think are genuinely frustrating. Like there are things about this game. I don't know if you've played any, Ben, but
Watched people play both Hollow Knight and Silk Song, and I just wish that I liked platformers more, because there have been so many good platformers that have come out in the last few years. It's something that's really accessible to indie devs, but I just really dislike the timing the jump really well, and like that doesn't turn my brain on like it does for other people.
That's the beauty of it. The thing about me is I think platformers are like the purest expression of video games, right? Like that was among the earliest stuff we were doing in gaming. And for me, the like lightning strike moment, the first one I can remember around technology and art and everything, was playing Super Mario Brothers for the first time and just being like, oh, this is amazing. This is I want my entire life to be around this. And I think I was 5 years old. And I was hooked for life after that. It is a thing. It's a thing you have to get used to. But anyway, Hollow Knight introduced this thing called pogoing, where if you'd like do a down sword, you can hop off of enemies and obstacles and stuff. And it was a way to get around things and also deal with enemies and stuff. Silk Song takes pogoing to an extreme because your down attack is like an angled attack. So, you know, Hornet, the main character, will like jump up and do like a side angle jump and then bounce up. And this game early on has you doing like three of those across spikes to safety. And it's a nightmare. I do hate that aspect. Like it's not fun. It's not good. I think Team Cherry is a little insane for putting that stuff way early, but you do get used to it. You do learn it. The bosses are tough and interesting. The world is still super immersive and mysterious. And even though gloomy, kind of chill, there's more color this time. I'm loving it. And what's weird is like, I am normally not a fan of the like punishing tough games. You know, I'm not a Dark Souls.
This game is notably hard.
Notably hard. So it's just sometimes hard things can be fun. You know, whatever floats your boat is a little different. Ben, have you ever played Symphony of the Night?
I haven't played Symphony of the
Night. That is a perfect video game, right down to the cheesy voice acting and the terrible 90s script. That game is perfect. So if you play any platformer, Symphony of the Night is the one. Super Mario World, you'll learn the basics of it. Mario World is so much better than any of the others.
But also go support like Hollow Knight and everything.
Have you played Super Mario World, Ben?
What's that?
Have you played Super Mario World?
Maybe.
What are we doing here,
remember
folks?
Playing a lot of like Super Nintendo with like older relatives, but I don't remember which Mario games it was.
This is where the age gap comes in because, again, getting a Mario World for Christmas and the Super Nintendo, that was such a momentous occasion. Platformers are great, and I'm glad that we're still showing love to them. So shout out to Silk Song. I'm glad it's finally here. I do think Team Cherry has pissed off the entire indie gaming community because they're like, hey, the game you've been waiting 7 years for, yeah, it's coming
this
out.
This game
a couple
took
weeks.
Steam down, allegedly.
It took the Nintendo servers down. It took every storefront it was on down, practically. And then they were like, yeah, this game that you were waiting so long for that we could probably charge anything and you folks will pay it, they charged $20 for it.
They sold 5 million copies, though.
Yeah, but other indie devs are like, guys, We're not in this that like we're not going to be a certain we're not certain we're going to sell millions of copies, right? We need to price our games at $30 and $40, and given like the breadth and depth of this game, they could have gone to 30 easily. They could have gone to 40, but this game initially started out as DLC for Hollow Knight, and it just this from what I've read, they basically like feature creep themselves into making a full game, and then feature creep themselves into working on it for 7 years. Because it's just a small team, they don't know when to tell each other to stop, and they're just going to keep going and keep adding features and content, whatever. So there's a bit of madness going on there, but gotta love them. Gotta love Team Cherry. Shout out to Silk Song. It's good. I'm playing on Switch too, so you know the Joy-Cons are not great for it, but I also wanted to recreate my Hollow Knight Switch situation, so I'm doing that. Also, shout out to The Paper, the sort of like Office reboot by Greg Daniels and folks. It's on Peacock right now. It's interesting. It's an interesting way to bring back the idea of The Office. It's a very much a message show because it's entirely about the death of journalism and the importance of journalism in media. And The Office was
the
just about...
People who work for The Paper are volunteers, right?
Some of them are probably
okay, but like not everybody's getting paid, and this is really talking about like the hollowing out of local papers.
That's just called interning for exposure in media, Ben. We all do that. But the thing is, The Office was just about some folks in a boring paper company, That's it. It's the, you know, office life of an American company. Really dull, really boring, except there is within that you find humor and drama. This one has a message, I think, kind of in the way that The Good Place had a message. And, you know, Greg Daniels was involved with that as well. It's the first few episodes are not that great, but I think it's kind of building up to something interesting. So there's that. Check out the paper if you've got Peacock. Maybe they're going to put some episodes on YouTube or something for people to check out. Also, finally, in pop culture picks, I want to shout out to kind of a monumental passing that happened on the internet recently. Mara the Box Loving Cat passed away recently. I got this news yesterday, and I am terribly sad because I loved Maru. I remember watching those old like 480p Maru videos. Maru loved box. He just loved boxes. You show Maru a box, he would jump in it. And his owner would just like create these really cute videos, these really cute like practical short films. These were among the first like viral internet videos that would get shared around. And it's a shame. And he lived a long life. I think it was 18 years.
Long life for a cat.
Yeah, but Maru gave us hours and hours of entertainment. So I love Maru. Very sad that we see the news about him passing away. Or her. Is Maru a girl? I don't even know. Maru was just Maru. Maru was just like some beautiful creature that loved boxes. So RIP Maru.
So that's the end of our episode. Thanks for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by me, Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at...
Devendra on Blue Sky, if you're in the right state, I guess. And also, I podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
Send me more alternative R&B to heybellman at Blue Sky. You can email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, because that really does actually help. And subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. RSS feeds, definitely. Also Spotify.